Let's talk about Godot. The open-source game engine announced it will no longer accept AI-authored code contributions. The exact quote from the maintainers, as reported by PC Gamer, is, "We can't trust heavy users of AI to understand their code enough to fix it." That's a pointed statement, and it generated 224 points and 140 comments on HN.
The debate in the comments split roughly three ways. One camp fully supports the policy on code quality grounds. They argue that AI-generated code has subtle bugs that only surface under edge conditions, and that maintainers shouldn't bear the cost of debugging code the contributor doesn't fully understand. A second camp thinks the policy is unenforceable and performatively symbolic. A third camp, which I found the most interesting, argued that the real issue isn't AI per se, but contribution quality standards that should apply regardless of how the code was generated.
That third camp argument is intellectually honest. The question of whether a contributor understands their own submission is valid independent of whether a language model was involved. But the maintainers aren't wrong to be practical about this. If AI tools are systematically producing contributions that pass surface code review but fail under real conditions, and if the volume of such contributions is increasing, you need a policy response. You can't review every line of every patch against a standard of, does the author fully understand this?
There's also something worth examining about what this means for the open source ecosystem more broadly. Godot is not the only project having this conversation. It's just the one that formalized the policy publicly. What we're watching is open source communities grappling with a genuine asymmetry. AI tools dramatically lower the barrier to generating plausible-looking contributions, but they don't lower the maintainer burden of reviewing them. If anything, they increase it.
This is actually where I want to bring in a bit of economic and legal context, because there's a curriculum corner angle here that I think listeners will find useful. The open source governance debate connects to a broader question about market power and platform control. Specifically, how we think about dominant players setting rules for ecosystems they don't own. It's a useful moment to talk about how antitrust law actually works, because it comes up in the AI context constantly, and people often misunderstand it.
Go for it, Marcus.
So here's the basics. The Sherman Antitrust Act, passed in 1890, prohibits two main things: anti-competitive agreements between firms, that's Section 1, and monopolization or attempted monopolization, that's Section 2. When people say a company is a monopoly in everyday conversation, they often mean they're really dominant. But in legal terms, having a large market share is not illegal by itself. What's illegal is using monopoly power to foreclose competition through anti-competitive conduct. The classic example that still gets taught in law schools is Standard Oil. Rockefeller controlled about 91% of U.S. oil refining in the 1890s, but the legal issue wasn't just the market share, it was the specific practices: predatory pricing, secret railroad rebates, coercive acquisitions. The Supreme Court ultimately broke it up in 1911. For AI companies, market share numbers get thrown around constantly. Anthropic has X percent of enterprise AI. But the actual antitrust question would be whether dominant AI players are engaging in specific conduct that excludes competitors unfairly. Tying arrangements, exclusive dealing, predatory below-cost pricing. That's a much higher bar than being popular. The FTC has been circling this space, but we're still in early innings on what AI-specific antitrust doctrine will look like.
And that context is directly relevant to the export controls discussion we had in the previous segment. When the government can control which AI models are available in which markets, that's a form of industrial policy that intersects with antitrust considerations in complex ways. A domestic company that faces no foreign competition in a market it helped the government define is in a legally interesting position. Now on Arxiv. The blog post announcing Arxiv's next chapter was fairly measured in its language. The organization is affiliated with Cornell, has been operating since 1991, and now hosts over 2 million papers. The announcement describes infrastructure upgrades, sustainability planning, and expanded subject area coverage. It doesn't announce anything dramatic, but the HN discussion was substantive because Arxiv's reliability is genuinely foundational to how modern science communicates.
The context that makes this interesting is the AI moment. Arxiv is currently flooded with AI papers. The volume of machine learning preprints has grown something like tenfold in the past 5 years. The platform was designed for a pre-LM era of scientific publishing volume. So infrastructure upgrades in 2026 mean something different than it would have meant in 2018. The community was asking pointed questions about quality filtering, duplicate detection, and how Arxiv plans to handle AI-generated paper submissions.
Which loops back to Godot's AI code policy in an interesting way. The scientific publishing world and the open source world are both confronting the same upstream question. When AI-generated content becomes volumetrically dominant in a review-gated system, what happens to the institution that does the reviewing?